33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. In June, the world learned about Chennai, a city in India that has completely run out of water. This month, we confirmed that Central American migration is fueled at least in part by a lack of water in the region. And all week long, we've been learning about water's place in our increasingly interconnected world through the lens of a series prepared by the Texas Standard's own Joy Diaz, titled Drop by Drop. And she joins us now in the studio. Hello there, Joy.
Hey, David. How are you?
I'm fine. Enjoyed the series. What motivated it?
Well, I've always been thinking about water because, you know, we use it every day. We drink it. We use it for our personal care. But more and more stories had something to do with water. And I recently attended a conference called Two Nations, One Water. And that sort of brought it home that, you know, whatever happens in Mexico in regards to water is related to us in Texas. And whatever happens in the United States and in Texas specifically, it completely relates to people in Mexico. So, you know, this Two Nations, One Water thing, specifically speaking about the Rio Grande, just made me think more and more about water stories.
Early in the series, you focused on this 1944 agreement. We're talking about coming on the end of World War II, the last complete year, last full year of the World War. What happened with that agreement? Who was it between, and why was it struck?
Yes. So we're talking about Mexico and the United States negotiating the waters of the Rio Grande. Mm-hmm. Mexico was a very tiny country by comparison at that time.
Right.
It was a sixth of what it is today.
Hmm.
We have the same agreement 75 years later.
The same agreement.
And, you know, population has boomed and species and climate change, or at least unpredictable weather patterns. And so, is it time to renegotiate that agreement?
I want to loop back and touch on the aspect of migration that we mentioned there in the introduction. How does water contribute to what we're seeing at the border?
When I've been talking to experts about water, one of the things that they say is, yes, when people arrive at the border, they will talk about violence in their countries. But when you talk about people who are displaced in Central America, people who leave the small towns and move into the city, they will tell you it's because we don't have water. It's because we cannot grow crops. It's because we're seeing a huge shift on what our livelihoods used to be and come from. And so,
Forgive me for interrupting. You were saying something about climate change refugees, really, is what we're starting to see.
Right. That's the term that a lot of scientists are using. And when you think about it, David, you know, you look at a place like Mexico that is experiencing a lot of problems with water. When you look further down to Central America, when you look at South America, people tend to move up to where the water is, where the food is, right? When we think about water in global terms, we need to start realizing that some countries are running out of water and some other countries have water. You know, the old fights of oil and the old wars of oil are probably going to shift into who has water and who doesn't.
A more precious resource, I suppose you might think of it as. Speaking of, in recent years, I know that there's been a movement led in many cities among activists concerned about resource shortages to forego having water at dinner. I was fascinated and rather delighted to hear the final installment in your series, in which you sort of questioned how much water we're actually saving, you know, how much water is involved in the preparation of food. Something that surprised me was it takes more water to prepare the same amount of chocolate as, say, prepare steak. I would have thought it would be quite the opposite.
Right, because when you are thinking, what should I do? How can I contribute at least a little bit to mm-hmm. preserving the water that we do have? And one thing that scientists love to say is we only have the water that we have. We cannot make any more. So that's one thought that is really ominous. But when you think about that and you think, okay, what can I do? Lots of people will say, well, stop eating meat. But to me, it was really sobering to think that it takes more water to produce chocolate than it takes to produce steak. Because I grew up vegetarian. For me, giving up meat is not a huge sacrifice, but I also grew up indulging myself with chocolate. Right.
Well, no, I understand but getting back to the impulse, what is it that people can do if they're concerned about these conditions and about the current situation?
Well, we often say educate yourself, and that's often truly one part of the solution, is when you know that you can have the same delightful meal, but by switching one item for another that takes less water. I guess if we all start thinking more about what our little part is, then we can make a difference.
For more on our series Drop by Drop, check out texasstandard.org/water and the terrific stories that our own correspondent Joy Diaz has been producing in her series Drop by Drop. Joy, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out to talk with us about your series, and congratulations.
Thank you, David.